The City of Detroit's emergency manager, Kevin Orr, resigned that position today. Governor Rick Snyder had a little send-off for him in Detroit. Joining me to talk about that and other Michigan politics is the It's Just Politics team, Rick Pluta with Michigan Public Radio Network and Michigan Radio's resident political junkie, Zoe Clark. So, Rick, you're in Detroit right now for Orr's final day. Fill us in.
Well, actually, as he put it, that as of midnight, he will be unemployed.
Don't you sort of wonder, like, you know, when you have office parties and there's someone going away, like you get a cake? I sort of wonder, like, for the emergency manager, if, you know, the governor didn't get him like a Kroger sheet cake.
That or says, a
like,
Detroit asset.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And this building is yours.
Yeah, we didn't see it. Actually, the order doing this was signed yesterday, and it says notice of termination, you know, which is not the sort of phraseology that you usually associate with something that should really be kind of a joyful occasion. We should point out that also that the quote end unquote of the bankruptcy, it's something of a formality that, you know, Mayor Mike Duggan has actually had, you know, day-to-day control of the city for a while. It just means that they're going to be spending a lot less time on legal matters, bankruptcy matters, and, you know, now the ball is in their court, although under the supervision of an oversight board.
And so, of course, not trying to be cliche in all of this, Lester, but look, this is sort of the end of the beginning, and we're now in this next chapter. So the idea that the end of financial problems or anything like that isn't quite there. But yet, at the same point, officially speaking, the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the United States is coming to a close.
Yeah, we're going to be talking a lot about that and what the numbers kind of look like tomorrow on stateside. So it's really interesting.
I was talking to an expert in municipal finance, and, you know, remember that right now we're emerging from the recession. The economy is improving. And so, you know, the lessons that we learned from the Detroit bankruptcy will probably not be applied now. But when we see, you know, local governments running into trouble when we hit the next recession, as of course we will.
Meanwhile, back in Lansing, the lame duck session is underway as the biennial surprise party for Michigan. And so I want to start out with first, anybody come up with a plan to fix the roads that'll actually pass and the governor will sign?
Let's take those two. Let's separate this. Has anyone come up with a plan? Oh, yeah. Oh, there's plans
out there. There's road funding plan, yeah.
it's the inability for the State House and Senate
to agree on
one.
It's like the guy in the street with the watches under his coat. Okay. There's a bunch of
you want
of
some
them.
Watches? I got some. You want a road funding plan? I got a road funding plan.
I got a road funding
Let
plan.
Let me sell it to you. No, so what's happened is the State House has now approved one. The State Senate has approved one. They have now said they will not agree on each other's, which creates what's going to be a conference committee. So we will have three lawmakers from the State House, three lawmakers from the State Senate, looking like four Republicans, two Democrats, most likely the leaders of both chambers coming together. They will try to figure out one bill or one measure. And how this will work then is they will come up with one and then they will take it back to their respective chambers, to the House and the Senate, and there will be no amendments allowed. There will be no more negotiations about those bills, and there will have to be a up or down vote.
So, Rick,
well, I will tell
us-
you what it will not be. It will not be the Bolger plan, which simply takes the sales tax on that motorists pay when they buy gasoline.
The 6% sales tax.
Shift it.
Right?
Yeah, it would shift it into roads. And the idea is that with, you know, economic growth will sort of, you know, cover the lost revenue to schools and local governments, and that would actually pause. It would revert to the current system if for some reason, the money starts running out, and the governor says that's a non-starter.
So that's the House plan. What's the Senate plan? How does it differ?
Well, the Senate plan is basically it's a fuel tax increase, and the governor says that actually, you know, generates the more than $1 billion in revenue that he says is necessary to just make Michigan's roads serviceable.
And this is the sticking point, right? I don't think you'll find a lot of people who will say $1.2, $1.5, maybe upwards of $2 billion isn't needed for the roads. The issue is where that money is going to come from. You know, you've got the Jace Bolgers who say, hey, just look at the state budget. We've got money. Take it from here. Take it from here. Waste, fraud, and abuse. You know, we'll cut here. We'll cut and we'll figure it enough. Then you've got others who are going, absolutely not. That is crazy talk. You're going to have to see some kind of tax increase if you're going to raise $1.5 billion a year. And so that's fundamentally what we have to figure out, right? What lawmakers, we don't have to do it. What lawmakers have to figure out right now. Let them do it.
Well, what the Bolger plan did, though, was it set up a stark choice, which says the money has to come from somewhere. And it either will come from what motorists pay at the pump, or it will have to come out of some other, you know, a service some other public service, or at least potentially from some other public service. And so now lawmakers are caught between their motorists who are starting to get concerned about what might happen this winter and the freeze and thaw cycle and what that does to the roads, and their school administrators, parents, you know, whatnot, who are saying, you know, don't do something that could potentially hurt our schools.
Right. And the Bolger plan, again, as Rick said, is not going to be the plan. I mean, you even see, you know, the conservative-leaning Detroit News calling out this plan, going, this is not workable.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some other bills that were introduced. Two bills introduced intended to complement each other. One would protect lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, but not transgender people, although the spokesman for the Speaker of the House argues they would be covered. And then a bill that would protect religious freedoms in Michigan, and there are big gaps in how people believe that law might be applied. A big difference is there. What's the latest on those two bills?
Well, it's not even the latest that, again, House Speaker Jace Bolger has declared the effort to put civil rights protections for lesbian, gay, and bisexual people into state law is pretty much dead. And it's specifically over that question of, quote, gender identity and including transgender people in it. But the speaker is pushing to have, now it's through the House, it's before the Senate, to adopt a Religious Freedom Restoration Act for Michigan, which is supposed to protect people's religious practices from unnecessary government intrusion.
And really what this is about, I mean, so that's the policy, but really the pure politics behind this is some LGBT rights advocates rubbed Jace Bolger the wrong way. They said they want LGBT rights. Jace Bolger said, nope, not going to do the T. And in fact, you are so against that I'm going to even show you how bad it can be for pushing me, thus the RFRA.
It's interesting, though, that if you're thinking about protecting under the Civil Rights Act in Michigan this group of people, why would you filter out the most vulnerable of the four groups in, when we're talking about this, the LGBT? Transgender people are most often attacked. They're most often discriminated against. And it just seems odd that you would say, you know, we'll do this for these folks, mm-hmm. but not for these folks.
Well, and one of the reasons why the LGBT movement is so steadfast on including the T in whatever protections happen is exactly that a few years ago, a cold-hearted political calculation was made with some federal legislation that they thought to get the votes, they would have to drop the T. And it's considered kind of a shameful chapter in the movement's history.
And basically said since then, you know,
never again.
Never again. That we are not going to compromise. And thus why we're not even seeing an LGB rights being added, because they said, nope, we want either all or nothing. We are unwilling to compromise.
And they have a backup plan that they're going to go to the ballot in 2016 unless for some reason the United States Supreme Court kicks, you know, the decision on same-sex marriage back to the states, and then, you know, that might be the ballot question instead or as well as.
But don't look for this to come up in the legislative session to come. We've got even more conservative Republicans. Mm-hmm. It is dead and lame duck. It
more
is
Republicans,
dead
more conservative Republicans. No one is expecting that this would happen over the next 2 years if it doesn't happen in lame duck.
Indeed.
All right. One final thing. There's legislation that would bar local governments from including requirements for community benefits when they're negotiating projects with developers. Who wins, who loses if that bill is passed?
Well, you'll remember that when we were talking about the bridge proposal, that there were some people saying that the city of Detroit should not agree, should not sign on until there's something called a community benefits agreement.
That the Delray neighborhood should get something out of having this being built, you know, where there are houses.
Yeah, we're talking about the NITC, the big new bridge that Canada is going to pay for, and we're going to help them get the land on the side.
And this would basically say this that now, you know, local governments wouldn't be able to complicate those negotiations by negotiating these CBAs, community benefit agreements. And that's not the only one that the legislature is also looking at adopting a law that would outlaw local ordinances that require employers to provide, you know, sick time, you know, sick leave, things.
And minimum wage as well comes back into the fold.
So who's for this? Who's against it?
It's a Republican-sponsored bill, and there are a lot of Democrats who will certainly not vote for it. And
this is pretty much an R versus a D issue, like a lot of them that we're seeing in lame duck.
All right, Rick, keep an eye on it for us, will you?
When I get back from Detroit.
Yeah, okay. That's Rick Pluta with the Michigan Public Radio Network, and Zoe Clark is with Michigan Radio. She's our resident political junkie. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lester.
Thanks.